Boker Tov, world. Today's daf in Masechet Sanhedrin, brought to you from Yerushalayim, Ir HaKodesh, is daf Chof. And we stopped yesterday in the middle of the fascinating sugya of the two daughters of Shaul, Merav and Michal. And we were contrasting or comparing, depending on the shita, the relationship that Merav had with Adriel HaMecholati, and the relationship that Michal had with Palti bin Laish. So what we came out basically is that in reality, at least the way we were medayik from the Pasuk, it's a machlokas, that Michal's marriage was actually a real marriage, and that either it's because of the fact that the Mea Arlot Shaplishtim was worth money, or because there was another, whatever the situation was, and that nonetheless, Shaul had given Michal to Palti ben Laish. Now, Palti ben Laish never slept with Michal because he was cheshesh, that maybe actually Shaul's Bezdin was wrong, and they considered it that she was not an Eshes Ish, and he was Machmran himself, and he never slept with her over all of the years that they had been married. So we're up to the Gemara on Amud Beis that begins with Ktiv Palti uKtiv Palti El. So we want to analyze now the tremendous madrega of what it is that Palti ben Laish had done all of these years. It's right in the middle of the very big lines at the end of the daf. So you'll see in the middle of the big lines, it's towards the end of the line. So Ktiv Palti Uktiv Palti El. So sometimes we call him Palti, and sometimes we call him Palti El. Why exactly is that? What does this Merames do? Rabbi Yochanan, well, actually, his name was Palti. The reason that he's called in the Torah Palti El in a different posik is because HaKadosh Baruch Hu helped him. And Palat means to be actually saved, to get him out of a tough situation. So his name was called Paltiel, Mipnei Shepilto El Mina Avera. God saved him from sinning with her, so that he had never slept with Michal. Ma'asa. I mean, how in the world does a person go for so many years sleeping with this woman in the same bed? And he has to, I mean, because of the Malchus, he has to continue to pretend to be married to her. And that the whole time he has to be Machmir, that he can't sleep with her. Na'atz Cherev Ben Olavina. He took a sword into the bed and put that sword between him and her. Anybody who gets horny around here is going to be stuck through with this sword. But wait a minute. When David took Michal back at the end, it says over there that Palti was walking with her and was crying the whole time, that his wife was being taken away. And it says, Vayelech ita isha, her husband went with him. If that's the point. So, why do we call him isha? I thought her husband. No, that's because she na'asa like isha. Look, he treated her like a husband in every other way. He was kind to her, supported her, he loved her, he did everything that a husband would do, but he refused to have actual physical relations with her because of the chashash. Remember, as far as he was concerned, I mean, this is an incredible thing to do, because he has the reshus of Bezdin to marry her. He has the melech's Bezdin, you know? And he has not only that, this is something that is beautifully pointed out by Rav Tzadok HaKohen, that it's not just that he had a reshus to marry her. Remember that as far as he was concerned, by his being machmir, he was actually being over an iser d'oraisa, because he's not allowed not to sleep with her if she's married with her, right? That's one of the things that he owes her. So he'll be over on sheirak sutava onata lo yigara. And so because of his chumra, he's going to be over on an iser d'oraisa of not to provide relations to a woman that he's married to. And I mean, like, it's not as if there's any, you know, strong Bezdin that's supporting him. So this is quite an astonishing thing. That's why it says Palto El, that simply that HaKadosh Baruch Hu saved him from having his mind go in that direction. As far as he was concerned, the overall sense that she was meant for someone else. She was in love with someone else. And David had wanted her as a wife. That was enough to be mechazik him to feel that he was doing the wrong thing, which is quite amazing. So therefore, when it says vayelech ita isha, it means that in every way he was indeed like a husband to her, in terms of the emotional context and the way that he was able to treat her, except for having intimate relations with her. But, I mean, how can you say that? It says, halochu v'chol, he was going along and he was crying why was he crying? He should be happy. If he thought the whole time he wasn't allowed to be with her, so why was he sitting and crying, walking and crying the whole way? Because this was an incredible mitzvah that he had been aimed on, and we consider to be not being chote when you're in a matzav that is b'chayev you almost to be chote in terms of your emotions, and you're not chote, so someone who has that opportunity and doesn't is considered to be doing a mitzvah. So it's going, al mitzvah d'azumine. This is like a terrible loss. He had this amazing mitzvah. And it says he walked with her ad bachurim. Why is it called the place bachurim? And why is it important to call it here? Shenasu shneim kevachurim. It means that both of them had never slept with each other, and they were like bachurim. They had never tasted lo ta'amu ta'am biyah. So they were both basically virgins this whole time that they had been married. Now, if you compare Palti to Yosef and to Boaz, we have three really strong cases in the Torah of people who were confronted with very profound sexual temptation and who didn't give in to that temptation. So who are those three people? We had Yosef, of course, in the parasha that we just had, and that was Eishes Potiphar. Then we had Boaz, where Ruth had actually come to him in the middle of the night and wanted him to take her b'yibum, and he refused until the next day, in which he would have the opportunity to go to Bezdin and so on. And then we had Palti ben Laish that we just described. So Omer Rabbi Yochanan, Tokbo shel Yosef, hanaftenuto shel Boaz. The greatest power of Yosef is like the smallest thing to Boaz. And tokbo shel Boaz, the power of Boaz to stand up against his nisayon, was the smallest thing, hanaftenuto shel Palti ben Laish. What do we mean? Tokbo shel Yosef, hanaftenuto shel Boaz. Because, look, what happened with Boaz is so much more powerful than what happened to Yosef. So in the middle of the night, Boaz suddenly wakes up, and there's a woman that's lying on him, and it says vayilafet, which is a very strange lashon, vayilafet, because the word lefet is the word for a turnip. Now, a very nice mushel for an erection is a turnip, of course, which is what exactly the Gemara considers this to be a remez to. So ve'yila fate means that he had an erection like a turnip. He got as hard as a turnip head. So if actually, the Pasuk actually describes his physical nisoyan, and that's considered to be connected Yosef. I mean, Yosef was trying to escape from this woman. It's not as if she was on top of him or anything like that. And nonetheless, Boaz managed to wait. And tokvo shel Boaz is anaftanuto shel Palti ben Laish. Kidi amoron, like we said, for many years, he was sitting there with her in the same bed, and he cared for her, treated her like a wife in every way, and nonetheless had never slept with her for all of that time. Omar Rabbi Yochanan, maitichtiv. This is also merumas in Mishle. Rabot banot asuchoyo, va'at alit al kulana. Rabot banot asuchoyo. This is a reference to Yosef and Boaz. Yes, there's plenty of Jews that do strong things. But at alita kulana, there's somebody who went beyond them all, and that was Palti ben Laish. And there's also another remez in that same parsha of Eishes Chayil. Omer Rabbi Shmuel bar Nachman, Omer Rabbi Yonatan. When it says there, sheker hachein ve'evel hayofi. So sheker hachein, that's a reference to Yosef. Hevel hayofi ze Boaz. Yirat Hashem iti talon, that's Palti ben Laish. So Yosef had to be Emed on the sheker of the chain of Eshes Potiphar. Boaz had to be Emed against the actual Yofi. Mitzrayim is not known particularly for the element of Yofi, but for the idea of the charm. And the Evelah Yofi is a reference to Boaz with Ruth. And Yirat Hashem Ital Titalo, that's a reference to Palti Ben Laish, where everything that he did was in terms of Yirat Shemayim. Davar Acher, Sheker Achein Zedoro Shel Moshe. Look, we've got this amazing door of the Kabbalah Satera, and these was the door Adea, and so on and so forth, but it was all given to them because they were Motzechein, like Moshe Rabbeinu says, Im no Matzati Chein Beinecha. So, that is not something that lasts, because it's just chayin. And if the person didn't work for their madrega, those people in the Dor HaMidbar, where they were made on Har Sinai, I mean, you know, even an idiot can maybe make it into a madrega when he's standing in front of HaKadosh Baruch Hu by Maimed Har Sinai. So, but that is not something that you achieved on your own. And therefore, on that level, it's sheker. Hevel HaYofi, Zedarol Shel Yehoshua. And Yehoshua's generation was also immediately afterwards. It was very beautiful. But again, it was based on being in the presence of the Machane and the Golim and the Malochim and the Shrina and the Mishkan for all of those years. So that's also a beautiful thing, but it's not achieved by oneself. Yirat Hashem Yititalo. That's a reference to the door of Chizkiyahu, because even though obviously they were much greater in the door of Moshe and Yehoshua, but in terms of the incredible, from Dan Vad Beresheva, as it says in the Pasuk, they checked everyone, well, it says in Gemara, I should say, they checked everyone in the door of Chizkiyahu HaMelech to make sure that they were Bekiyim in Kol HaTorah Kula, and they couldn't find a single Am Haaretz in the entire country. In the Fev, every single child was a Baki, even in the mikvahs that we're doing today. So that's pretty good. Tavar Acher, Sheker Achein includes both Doros of Moshe v'Yoshua. Hevel HaYofi includes even that door of Chizkiyahu. You know what Yirat Hashem Yititalal is. Zeh Doros Shel Rabbi Yehuda Rabbi Loi. That door of Rabbi Yehuda Rabbi Loi, where they say on that door, Amru Alav Rabbi Yehuda Rabbi Loi, that in his days, they were so incredibly poor. And the Gemara talks about Rabbi Yehuda Rabbi Loi himself, if you recall, that he only had, between him and his wife, they only had one coat. And he used to make a brocha on that coat, so they would take turns going out. They couldn't both go outdoors at the same time. So his Talmidim also were extremely poor, and they managed, between six Talmidim, to manage to cover themselves with only $1, which was all they had between them, and nonetheless, they were Isaac Patera. And that is a real beautiful expression of Yirat Shamayim, as my Rebbe explained very beautifully. Normally, it's not really possible for six people to be covered with one talit, right? Because, I mean, everybody's pulling in their direction to try to cover their toesies that are sticking out. I mean, whatever. Hashem came the door of Rabbi Rabbi Loi. The Yirat Shamayim was the fact that each one of them cared more about the other person being covered, so everybody was pushing the talit over the other one. That's the only way it's possible for the talit to actually cover six people. Okay, we're ready now for our esteemed porridge-eating capitan, who maybe can give us a moment. Lovely, lovely. All right, so yesterday we spoke about the din of the Kohen Gadol, and what happens when someone in his family dies, the machlokas, about whether he's allowed at all to be able to follow the mitar, whether we have to be makbid, like Rabbi Yehuda says, that he shouldn't be in a position where there's no way that he could possibly get involved emotionally to the extent that he would end up becoming tameh. So now we want to do the same thing in the continuation of the Mishnah for the melech. What is the din of the melech in the situation of being an Avel? So Metlonit, somebody who is a member of the family of the Melech dies, Ena Yotze Mipetach Dlatri Shalom. He is not allowed to go out of the actual castle in which he lives because it's considered to be a lessening of the chashivas of a melech to be involved in even day-to-day human condition. And Melech is somehow beyond all of that, and he's not allowed to show his personal emotions, because as far as the Am is concerned, he's not a person. He's the Melech. He's the expression of the Am. So he's not allowed to even go out and show his involvement. Rabbi Yehuda says, no, that's not true. If he wants to, he can. Im rotze latzet acharav mita yotze, because we have very good grounds to be matir it, because David HaMelech actually went out after the mita, and it wasn't even for his relative, but it was someone that he treated like a relative. And that was the story of Avner. So remember that Avner Ben-Er was a tremendous gadol, one of the greatest of his generation. And he had been backing the malchus of Shaul, and after Shaul died, Ish-Boshet, the son of Shaul, claimed that he was the Melech, and the Avner Ben-Er supported his malchus. Now, what happened was is that after some time, they fell out, and it turned out that Avner came to David and gave David the malchus of Ish-Boshet. So the Yoav was the Tsar HaTzava of David, did not like that little pact, and he ended up killing Avner, which David felt was something that could have destroyed the entire possibility of ever getting all Klal Yisrael together again. And so he went to the funeral of Avner. He gave a beautiful hesped that we have record of in the Torah. And he was definitely, he treated him as if it was a personal member of his family. And he became an ovel over Avner. So since we find that he was able to go out, David HaMelech was yotzei achar mitato shel Avner, shenemar v'hamelech David holech achar hamita, he was following the mita. Omru lo, that's a very unique situation, said the Chachomim. That doesn't mean that he's allowed to show personal tzar. What it was that David was doing was something that was extremely national. And it was actually an expression of the Am. Lo hayah hadavar lefayes et ha'am. What he was doing was something that was necessary on a national level to be able to bring the people back together again so that there wouldn't be in the least anyone who was choshed that he was behind the murder of Avner, because it sure looked very suspicious. I mean, Avner was the one who had been fighting all of these years, 2.5 years. He had been supporting Ish-Boshet against David, even though David had asked him in a letter that all of Klal Yisrael should get together. And instead, what happened was that David ended up being king in Hebron, and Ish-Boshet was still considered to be the Melech by others. So in order that it shouldn't look like he was behind it, he went and expressed Avelut as if it was a personal Avelut. So you can't bring a proof from there, say the Chachomim to Rabbi Yehuda. Getting back to the halacha of the Melech who is in Avelut, Ukishim Mavrinoto, when you're bringing the king the first meal after the funeral, so there he's brought the food, Kol Ha'am Mesubim Al Ha'aretz, V'hu Meisev Al Ha'Dargesh. So everybody sits on the floor, and whereas the Kohen Gadol, we said before that he was on a bench, as I've said, the king is on something that is even more chashuv. It's not his normal kisei, of course, but it is a dargesh, and we'll see what that is in the Gemara. Tanur Rabbanan. This is a similar machlokas that we have, Megabe bringing a raya from what was that David was doing. Makom shenagu nashim letzeit achar hamita yotzeit, lifnei hamita yotzot. So there were two different minhagim. In some places, the women would walk in front of the mita, in the funeral bier, and in other places, they would walk behind. Now, the Yerushalmi brings both of these, and it says that the reason that the women were nohagot to walk in front is because of the additional sensitivity of women to elements of death, because of the fact that they see themselves as responsible for bringing death into the world because of Chava, the first woman. So they would walk in front as if to take responsibility for bringing death. The other Madioma says the minhag is better that they should walk behind because it's not proper that they should be placed in a position where the men are all looking at the women. Whereas the other Shita, since it's a place of morbidity, people are not going to get turned on by the women. Okay. Now, in that Braita, Rabbi Yehuda says that, no, the correct minhag is that it should not be dependent on what it is that people locally do, because we see in the pasuk that women are supposed to be in front of the mita. How do we see that? Because since David HaMelech, it says, was yotzei achar mita toshel avner, shenemar HaMelech David holech acharei amita, it's most reasonable that David HaMelech was not walking with the women. He was walking with the men, and it says that he was walking behind the mita, which means that the men were walking in the back, and apparently the women were in front. So that's a raya that, in terms of the way the pasuk sees it, the correct minhag is actually for the women to walk in front. Omrullah. So here, too, the Chachomim used the same argument that they used in our Mishnah. Lo haya hadavar ela lefayeset ta'am. The only reason that he walked in that way was because he needed to mix with the men and the women. Because everybody needed to see David HaMelech's pain, and that was the point. He wasn't walking as an expression of his own personal pain, which, because of course, he would have walked with the men. But actually, he needed to mix with everyone so that they would see that he was not behind the murder of Avner. And therefore, Hayadavid Yotzei Mibeina Anashim V'Nichnas Beina Anashim, Dafka, he went both between the men and the women. And then he was Yosef ben Anashim, and he went back ben Anashim. And that's why it says in the Pasuk, V'yedu kol ha'am v'chol Yisrael, ki lo hayta mi'amelech lamita tavner. So it's stressing that the entire country, men and women, both became aware that for sure it was not David HaMelech's will that Avner was killed. Dorash Rova, you'll notice that in the Pasuk it says, Vayavo kol ha'am lahavrot et David. Everybody came to bring that first meal that's given to an ovel. So they viewed David HaMelech as being a member of the family. No, he wasn't related to Avner ben Ner. Now, if you take a look at that word, the ksiv of that word is not lahavrot, which is to bring the first meal, but rather lahachrot, to murder him. They were going to cut him up. So indeed, we read it lavrot, but that's to show that initially, when people suspected that David was behind this, they were ready to kill him. But when he made it clear that he wasn't behind it, then they came lahavroto and they realized that he was treating himself as an actual ovo, as a member of the family. Once we're on the topic of Avner, Amrav Yudah Merav, why in fact did Avner end up being murdered in this fashion? Mipnei ma'ane enash Avner, mipnei shayalo limchot b'sha'ul v'lo michal. Rav Yehuda says that Rav's sfora is that when Sha'ul went to kill Nov Irakayanim, he didn't say anything. And he could have protested because he was the one in charge of the army. And he could have said to Sha'ul that he refuses to allow such a thing to happen. Rabbi Yitzchak Amar, and it's not true. Micha, actually, Avner did attempt to prevent the murder of Nov Yivrakanim, and lo na'ana, he was unable to do anything about it, and Shaul refused to listen to him. And actually, the remez to both of these showed shitas, Rav shita, that he did not do proper bicha'a, and Rabbi Yitzchak shita, that he did, is merumez, each one of them, in the way they read the pasuk. So it says over there, the hesped that David HaMelech gave over Avner, and it says, "Vaykunen Amelech al Avner, vayomar hakimot naval yamut Avner." Does it make sense that Avner should die like a person who was a low-class individual? After all, yadecha lo asurot, v'raglecha lo lenechushtayim ugashu. Your hands, Avner, They weren't tied up. Your feet were not in chains. So how do we understand that? So Rav explains it. According to Rav, he didn't do what he was supposed to do. So what it was that David was Melech was saying is, why didn't you do something about it? Yadecha lo asurot. After all, it's not as if you didn't have a position of power to be able to protest. Raglecha lo nechushayim ugashu. You were a person that had tremendous power in the Malchus of Shaul. Why didn't you say anything? My time alomachita. So because of that, you have fallen as if you were a person that actually deserved to be murdered like this, which is a tragedy. Whereas Rabbi Yitzchak says, no, that's not what it means. He did try. David was saying this with a question. He was shocked. How is it possible? Hakamot Naval Yamut Avner should die as if he's a lowly person? Yadecha lo asurot, v'raglecha lo lo nechushtayim. After all, you were a person who did not view himself as being limited in any way. You had incredible guts to go and to complain and to protest and to try to do your best to prevent that murder from Novi Rakonim from happening. Michte, michuye machita, you did whatever you could to stop it. How is it possible that this terrible end should befall you? My time can fall if neve neavlana falta, that you should fall as if you were a person that is roy to fall in front of such evil people. So why, in fact, according to Rabbi Yitzchak, why, in fact, was Avner dealt such a terrible blow? So Lamandi Amr Nicha, we said before that the reason that he was killed was because he wasn't Moche. But according to Rabbi Yitzchak, that he was Moche, how do we explain what happened to him? Omrim Nachman Bar Yitzchak, because it was Avner's fault that David HaMelech's Malchus was put off for 2.5 years. Because after David HaMelech was in Hebron, where Shevet Yehuda was Melech David on them, so remember, he was there for 7 years. So 5 years into his reign, he wrote to Ishbosheth, to the people that were with Ishbosheth, that we should have a single Malchus in Yisrael, and that it's not appropriate that we should have two Melechim, and that everybody should accept him as the Melech. Instead, Avner went, and he made Ishbosheth officially the Melech. That took 2.5 years until that changed. So because of that, since David HaMelech would have become Melech earlier, that's why he was Chayev Misa. Omrim Nachum Bar Yitzchak, Sheshiha Malchut Beit David, Shteshelim Umechzim. Okay, getting back to the Mishnah. The Mishnah says that when we're Mavrin the Melech, he sits on a Dargesh. Now, what exactly is this Dargesh? My Dargesh. Omer Ula, it's an Arsa de Gada. The Gada is actually the same word as the English word God. Those of the gods. So the gods were like genii of good luck and so on. Arsa de Gada is they used to put up a bed for the god of riches, you know. So it should be Mazel Tov. So Rashi says it's like a Nichush. And the Ron goes to town. How could Rashi say Nichush? Actually, it's not 100% that the Ron is the Ron himself. It could be that someone else wrote it and it's miyuchas to the Ron. But in any event, how could Rashi say that it's nichush? How is it possible we would have a bed in Jewish homes that was nichush? So, I mean, the other Rishonim explained that the meaning of nichush is we find in the Gemara that there's a concept called the Tsar of a poverty. The Tsar of poverty's name, according to the Gemara, is filth. So people who keep their house filthy, so they're inviting in the god of poverty, Mr. Filth himself, right? So the Arsa de Gada is the opposite. That's the god Gedi, that there should be a mazel. He's called Mr. Clean. Now, they use that, of course, as the name of a spray to clean your counters. But, I mean, the real mucker for Mr. Clean is Nakid, which is the Gemara's name for the Tsar of riches. Okay, so Mr. Clean is invited into the house with the dargash. What is the dargash? Dargash is a beautiful bed that is set up to show that this is a house. Nobody uses it. This is a house in which everything is high class. Everything is clean. So everything was kept very clean on this dargash. It's not normally used as a human sitting bed. But in this case, at the time that he's an ovel, we're not going to have the king sit on a stool. And on the other hand, an ovel doesn't sit on the normal chair. So he sits on the dargash. Umrulei rabbanan l'ula. That doesn't make any sense. I mean, Mika Midi Yada Idna Losvine. Nobody ever sits on a dargash until now. Now that he's an ovel, so now we put him on a dargash. Hashta Musvina Nala. Says Rava, I don't understand what your problem is. Why is that a problem? And every day, do we have people coming in, bringing, you know, some food for the king? I mean, that's outrageous. People walking in here have some eggs, and I'm like, well, I mean, but obviously, it's because of the avelut. So it's the same thing. Same way that we present him with eating and drinking. Nobody brought him food. And why do we do that now? We understand that it's a completely different situation. And that's the point, isn't it? To be able to support him in his avelut. So the same thing is true. We put him on the dar. That's not a problem. I have a problem. I'll tell you, I do have a problem with Ula, but not this ridiculous question. Elei kasha or kasha. It says in a braita that a dargash eino tzarich lichvoto ela zokvo. You do not have to turn over the dargash. Now, the din is, in those days, where a bed was actually put up and supported the mattress, and there would be a difference if it was on one side or the other side. Nowadays, it doesn't make any difference. But it says over there, in those days, when they used to take apart every bed and turn it upside down, it says the dargash, you don't turn upside down. Instead, you stand it up on its smaller edge. Now, if you're going to tell me that a dargash is what you claim, Ula, namely, it's the arsadigata, why in the world would we not have to turn the dargash upside down? Because there's another brighter that says that an ovel who turns over his bed in the house does not only turn over his bed, he turns over kol mitochi yishlo b'toch betohu kofeh as a sign of the avilut. It's not a question of him. It's a question of showing that this is a home that doesn't have a place for people to feel comfortable in. It's in such agony. So if the dargash is actually a type of bed, why are we not kofeh the dargash? Says the Gemara, I don't understand. We're not kofeh beds that aren't used. Let me ask you something. Suppose you have a couch in the house which you use to display your pretty dishes, you know? And then when you need the dishes, you take them off of the couch. You don't have a cabinet for your stuff. That's called a mita miyuchedet lekelim. Do we turn over a mita miyuchedet lekelim? No. So maybe the dargash, which is meant to be a actual symbol, it's not meant to be really a bed. So the idea is the same way that a mita miyuchedet lekelim is not turned upside down, so too the dargash is not turned upside down. Diktani, imaita miyuchedet lekelim, eino tzarich lichvotos. So that doesn't bother me either. But I'll tell you what does bother me about Ula. I don't like his pshat, but not because of all of these ridiculous questions. These questions are not problematic. I'll tell you what's wrong with Ula. And that is that Rav Shimon ben Gamliel argues with the idea of putting the dargash on its small end. What he says is, what you do is you untie the loops of the dargash, and then it just collapses by itself. Now, there are no loops on an arza de God. I don't know what you're talking about. So obviously an arza is not a arza de God, because karbiti mi'itle, they don't have any kind of loops like that. It's a regular bed. A regular bed, there's no loops that you can untie. So therefore, it must be something else. Elakiata Ravin, I'll tell you, Ravin came from Eretz Yisrael, and he said that when I was in Eretz Yisrael, there was a certain Talmud Chacham, his name was Rav Tachlifa, and he was someone that had a lot of business in the leather market, and he told me that he knows what a dargash is, And he said a dargash is an arsadat salah. That's a very famous kind of thing. It is a type of bed, but it's made like a cot in which you sleep on a leather piece that is supported by loops that come out from the side of the bed. And because of that, it was very important that the leather shouldn't be on the actual ground, because then it would get damp and that would damage it. So Mamela, you can't turn it over and put it on the ground. So the question is, what do you do? Okay, so Tanakama said you just put it up. And Rav Shimon ben Gamliel said that no, actually allow the leather to fall off and then the whole thing collapses and then you put it away. So that is why I don't believe that Mula is right. It is an arsadat salah and not an arsadat gada. Omer Rabbi Yirmiya, Omer Rabbi Yochanan, the difference is that an argash, the serugo is mitocho, whereas a mitah, the serugo is me'al gaba. So remember that the way that they used to support a mattress in those days is that they would have a bed frame, and then they would utilize ropes that would go from one end to the other, and then they would put whatever type of mattress that they're using or whatever types of blankets that they put on top of those ropes. So that on a mitah, they would actually weave the ropes around the sideboard, go around to the other side, weave it on the other side, and therefore the entire side was covered with the rope. Masha Enkein, when it comes to this arsadat salah, they would drill holes through the sideboard, put through a loop that was then tied and knotted, and then the leather piece would be tied onto those loops that were sticking in through the holes of the sideboard that were supported. That's the difference. So the sirug, the weaving, is on top of the wood when it comes to a bed. Bashenkin, when it comes to the arsadat salah, the weaving goes through a hole in the frame. Meitfei, how can that be true? As we all learned together in the Mishnah in Kalin, Kli 8, Me'ematai Bekablim Tumah. So we said over there, what is considered to be a gemar, the gemar Kli of a Kli 8? So the Mishnah says, if you have a bed, you have a child's crib, when you've given it a good sandpapering, of course they didn't use sandpaper, they use shark skin, right? So that's like a very nice, fine sandpaper. So when you shark skin the wood, and now it's all polished and smooth, that's considered to be Mishi Shufim Bor Hadak. Now, if you're telling me that the way that a mita is made is that the ropes are put over the sideboard, it's an awful big waste of good energy to use sandpaper to make it all smooth, because nobody's ever going to see it again. It's going to be completely covered by these ropes. So that makes no sense. So it can't be. E mita misuregas me'al gaba, lona li shifat or adag. Why are people rubbing it down with this very difficult treatment to give it the smooth finish? So it can't be that that's the difference between a dargash and a mita. So what is the difference? Must be that both the mita and the dargash are actually, they are woven by putting holes through the sideboard and not going around all over. All right, we have to make it smooth. The only difference is that the mita is aule v'afuke bibizione. When it comes to a bed, you actually take the ropes, you put them in, out of one hole, move them around, put them through the next hole. But the dargash, you have these avaktas, these loops that you put in through the hole, and then you put the actual ropes that support the leather, you put them through those loops. That's the difference. But both of them are going to need polishing, and that's why the Mishnah in Kalim said that the Gemar Kli is after it's polished properly. Rav Yaakov, Rav Yeshua ben Levi, the halacha is like Rav Shimon ben Gamliel, that you untie it from the loops and the leather falls down. Rav Yaakov bar Ami, Mita shenakliteh yotzin. If you have, let's say, a canopy bed, so in a canopy bed you have a stick that's sticking out of the middle or from the four sides, there's no way that you're able to turn that upside down, assuming they're attached to the bed. So there too, zokva, you put it up on its small side, and that would be enough. Vidayo. So even though you can't turn it upside down, you're yotzi the din of avelut by making it clear that this mita is not going to be used. Which brings us to the next exciting episode that we await so anxiously from our beloved Capitan, who is working really above and beyond today. Sheker Achein, Hevel Ayofi, go ahead and give it to us, Capitan. Ah, well worth the wait. So now, getting on to the other dinim of the Melech, Motzi l'melchemet harashut al pi beitin shel shivim ve'echa. Now, this is a little bit strange, because the first Mishnah in the Masechet said this already, right? That you need to have ein motzi l'melchemet harashut ela al pi beitin shel shivim ve'echa. But it is telling us here for the first time about the Melech, that the Melech is the one that actually makes these decisions in conjunction with the consent of the Beis Din. So the Gemara will discuss this. And what's more, poreitz la'asot lo derech ve'in memacheh b'yadav. He can have eminent domain, and therefore he can break through private property and make a road, and nobody can stop him. Now, there's a whole machlokas, halacha l'maisa, in what this is referring to. The Rambam says beferish when he brings the halacha, heilech b'shova, inu ma'akim adrochim, mipnei karmo shel zeh, mipnei sadeu shel zeh. The Rambam says he does not make a road go around somebody's personal property, but rather heilech b'shova. But the thing is that he throws in two words. Holech b'shove v'ose milchamto. So there's Rambam is learning that the din over here that the Melech is peretz la'asot lo derech, which you'll recall, we just had in Rashi in the Parsha, in Peretz. Why did she call Peretz was a remez to the Malchus? Because HaMelech peretz la'asot lo derech. Fine. Okay, but that means so the king has this eminent domain. But according to the Rambam, it seems to be a halacha dafka in Milchama, so it's a continuation of the first part of the Mishnah. He's motzi l'melchemet harashus uporetz lasot lo derech v'imamachah b'yadav in the context of that. But many of the other Rishonim learned that these are two completely different dinim. One of them is dinim milchama, and the other is that actually he's able, as Rashi understands it, if he's building roads, then he has the right of eminent domain. Derech hamelach en lo shiur. Not only that, but if this is the path of the king himself, the El Camino Real, so then there's no limit to its size. He needs this kind of size. Fine. In the war, kol ambozazim v'notim lo, everything that is picked up by any soldier in the war of plunder, it's first put in front of the king to choose what it is that he wants. V'unotel chelek barosh, he takes his part first. We're going to see that that is the half of the entire plunder that he wants. So, Tanina Chodazim. So, first of all, why is the Mishnah mentioned that it's al pi bezin shel shivim ve'echad if we already saw that in the very first Mishnah of the Masechet? Ein motzin l'melchemet harashut el al pi beitin shel shivim ve'echad. So, why are we repeating it? It's not such a problem. I did the Tana called me the Melech. Tana Nami Motzin L'Melchemet HaRashut. Because once it is that it's telling us the dinim of the Melech, so therefore it gives us this idea that he's Motzin L'Melchemet HaRashut. Al Pi Bezdin Shal Shivim Ve'echad. That's look, I have to be honest that this doesn't really make much sense, right? Because the Achronim talk about this. I mean, it's the question wasn't, why does it say he's Motzi L'Melchemet HaRashut? The question was, why does it say it's Motzi L'Melchemet HaRashut? I'll be best in Joshua and Yaakov. And you don't address that. You're saying, Tananami Motzi L'Melchemet HaRashut. I mean, that's like a little bit weird. So it could be that the Kasha originally was that if we're already telling me the din that he's motzi, that you're motzi for mochemes rishus al pi bezit shashim and viyachad, those dinim should have been mentioned, the melech should have been mentioned there too. So that we're saying since here is the place where we're telling you the dinim of the melech. So we mention again that it's al pi bezin shel shimon v'yachad. That's why we say motzin l'mechamas arishus here. But it's a little bit strange. I have to admit that I don't have a very strong grasp on how exactly the Gemara is asking and answering here. Okay, now we have the entire story where after the Am comes to Shmuel and they tell Shmuel, we want you to appoint a king. So he gives them a very scary portrait of what it is that they're going to suffer from this king. All right, you should just know what you're getting into, you know? Because he makes it sound like a horror. He's going to take your kids and they're going to become his riders. This is what you want, a life for your kids, to be horsemen for a king, right? And to be running in front of the king. And he'll be taking your kids to be sarei alafim, v'sarei chamishim, and then they'll work in his fields, you know, l'charosh charisho, l'ktsor ktsiro, l'asor klei milcham tov. This guy's gonna, he's gonna take advantage of your making him cling, let me tell you. They're gonna be building his trucks, his cars, his army. Then he might like your daughters, you know. He'll take your daughters too. I mean, he needs people to be working, to be making perfume. He needs people to be working in the kitchen. Who do you think is going to be working in the kitchen? Think he's going to be bringing Africans? No. They're going to be your daughters. The tapachot, lofot. This is terrible. And then, you know, you've got your favorite fields and you've got your favorite vineyards. You'll take those too. Et sedotechem, et karmechem, zeitechem atovim yikach. That he's going to give away natan la'avadav. Why should you have such good land? He'll give it away to the people that are on his side, you know. And then he'll take avdechem v'shivchotechem and bachurechem atovim and chamorechem yikach to do malacha. There's a tax. I mean, after all, you got to give your kids. You got to give your cars. Oh, man, you guys have it made. Sonchem yaser, attempt yulalava. This is horrifying. But this is called the Parshas HaMelech. Now the question is this Parshas HaMelech for real? Or is this Parshas HaMelech an attempt to terrorize? Or does the king really have a right to do all of these things that we say over here? So that's a big machlokas. So the question is how to understand that. So Amr of Yeramr, Amr Shmuel, Kolamur Parshas Melech, Melech Mutterbo. The din is the king really has the theoretical right to do these things. Whereas Rav Amar, lo nemra parasho zu, ela la'ayim aliyah. The whole point over here is for them to understand what they're getting involved with. And that, look, if a king ends up abusing his powers, he'll do that too. And you have to have the fear of this. Shenamar som tasim alecha melech, shetayim aso alecha. You're not supposed to be happy with that king. You're supposed to be terrified of the king. And that is the Machlokas Tanai. Rabbi Yossi Omer Kolo Amur B'Parshas Melech Melech Mutterbo. Rabbi Yudha Emer Loi Nemra Parshas Zu Ela Kidei La'ayim Aliyah. Shinemar Tosom Tassim Alecha Melech Shetehei Emato Alecha. V'cheinu Aya Rabbi Yudha Emer. Furthermore, the question is whether the whole Parsha was meant to be taken as a tzivoy. Are we supposed to have a king or not? So Rabbi Yehuda says, look, making a king is a mitzvah. Sholosh mitzvahs nitztavu Yisrael b'knisatan la'aretz. There were three special mitzvahs that we were mechuyav as soon as we came into Eretz Yisrael. La'amid lahem melech, la'chrit zaro shel amalek, and to build Beit HaMikdash. Livnot lahem Beit HaBechira. Whereas Rabbi Noroi Amar, no. This idea of Som Tasim Alecha Melech, that was actually a concession to the stupid people who wanted a king. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, okay, you want to be dumb? Go ahead and make yourself a king. So Lo Nemra Parsha Zo, this Parsha of the Melech, in which it says Som Tasim Alecha Melech, was only Keneget Tar Amutam, because they said, Asim Alei Melech, we want to have Kol HaGoyim, all the goyim around here, they have a melech. The melech takes them out to war. Where's our leader? And actually, the Braita says, it depends on the way that it was asked for. Rabbi Eliezer Omer, the zekenim that were in that door of Shmuel, Kohogen Shalu, they asked for a king properly. Because if you take a look at the language of the original Bakasha, it says, Tnot lonu melech l'shoftenu. Give us a king to be a judge. So they wanted to have a king to have more power for judicial purposes that wouldn't be restricted because of the limitations on a Beis Din's koyach. A king can do the kind of things that a Beis Din can't allow itself. It's the Amei Haaretz. They were the ones who wrecked things, where they threw in the words, Vayinu gam anachnu kekol ha-goyim. We want to be like the goyim. He'll go out and fight for us. So that type of thing. Why do they need a king when they have a Kadosh Baruch Hu? Tanya, Rabbi Yossi Omer Sholesh Mitzvahs Nitzavu Yisro Biktisatam La'aretz. There were these three mitzvahs. Ma'amid Lehem Melech, Lachriz Zarosh Al HaMelech, Livnot Lehem Beit HaBechira. Now those are three separate psukim, and there does not seem to be any necessary order in the mitzvahs. They're just three separate mitzvahs. So any yodea is emean techila on my own when we come into Eretz Yisrael. How do I know which one comes first? So kishu om ki yodakes kamil chamal Hashem ba'amalek. It says that the hand is on the throne of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Keiska. Keiska itself is a reference to having a melech. So it's clear that they already had a melech, lamid lamelech tchila, because the lashon of the kisei of Hashem is a reference also to having a melech. Shenemar vayeshev shlomo al kisei Hashem lamelech. So we see that the malchus is called the kisei Hashem. So then if the shvua is al keiska to destroy a melech, it means with the power of a king. So the king has come first. Now, we're left with the two mitzvahs, building a Beit HaMikdash or destroying Amalek. Which one comes first? Adayin eini yodea. In livnot ben Beit HaBechira techila, ulachrit zaro shel Amalek techila. But, kishu omer, viniach lachem mikol oyveichem. The mitzvah of building the Beit HaMikdash is only after you no longer have any enemies, which includes, of course, your major enemy, Amalek. Then, vaya, makom, asher, yifchar, Hashem, and so on and so forth. That's the description of your building a Beis HaMikdash. So that shows, Havei Omer, first you have to get rid of your enemies, lachrit zaro shel Amalek tchila, and then comes the mitzvah to build the Beis HaMikdash. And we find the same language when Dovin HaMelech decides that it's time for him to build a Beis HaMikdash. Came to David. Omer vayiki yashav v'amelech David b'beito, v'Hashem iniach lo misaviv b'kol oyva. After David HaMelech was now completely settled, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu had removed all of these enemies from all around Yisrael, then and only then does it say, v'yomer HaMelech el Natan HaNavi, this is inappropriate. Re'ena anochi yoshev b'beit HaRazim, here I am, sitting in a beautiful palace, and the Orein Hashem is sitting here in these curtains, referring to the Mishkan. I want to build a house. So you see that he only decided to build that house after Michias Amalek. Omer Ish Lakish, speaking of that Malchus of Shlomo, where it says that he was sitting on the Kisei of Hashem, that was only in the beginning. B'tchila malach Shlomo ala elyonim, shidam avayeshev Shlomo al kisei Hashem. He was originally in charge of all of the sorium of the umais and those beings that were in the shamayim, and maybe even according to some malachim. There it says the kisei Hashem. But after that, he went down to being only king on everything that is below the Shamayim. Shenemar, ki hu rodeh b'chol ever ha-nahar mi-tifsach va'ad Aza. That was his dominion. Only from Tifsach to Aza, whatever that is, that's the Machlokas. Rav and Shmuel, similar to the Machlokas that we had in Mehodu v'ad Kush, Chadamar Tifsach is on one part of the world, Aza is on the other part of the world, and he was everything in between. Whereas Chadamar, actually Tifsach va'Aza, are right next to each other. As easy it is to be a king on Tifsach and Aza, it means that's the way he ruled over the whole world. But after that, he became only the king on Yisrael. Shenemar ani Kohelet, hayiti melech al Yisrael. And at the end, he didn't even have the whole Yisrael. He was only the king on Yerushalayim. Shenemar divrei Kohelet ben David melech b'Yerushalayim. Why are you calling him melech b'Yerushalayim? If he's the melech over everything, that's what he was left with. But in the end, he didn't even have Yerushalayim. All that he had left was his bed. Because it says he named mitato shel Shlomo. So then that means that was the only place that Shlomo HaMelech was really a king. And at the end, all that he had left was his stick. So Shlomo HaMelech says in Koheles, this is all that I have left from all my great adventures in life. What is the Zeh? Rav and Shmuel argue what the Zeh is. One says it means is Markel. That is a simon of Malchus. And one says it doesn't even mean that. It means Gundo, that he's still dressed like a king. Did he ever become a full king again? Hadar or lo hadar? Rav and Shmuel, chadomer hadar, v'chadomer lo hadar. So if you say that Shlomo never regained the full kingdom, that means that you hold that once Shlomo was a king, but at the end he became a hadyot. He was a melech v'hadyot, and in the end, he became a king once again. So this is, Balei Musar make a big deal of this, that a person, even if he ends up losing everything, like Shlomo. So this is another thing my Rebbe used to point out, that to call him a king over his makel, over Gundo, I mean, that's a joke. We mean a king over. It means exactly what it says. That the getter of Malchus that he had, that never left him. The question was whether he was zeicher to be able to express that Malchus over others, but internally, he maintained that sense of what it is to be a melech and the responsibility of Malchus. But Lamaisa and Balei Musar speak about this a lot, whether a person who has a tremendous yirida, like Shlomo HaMelech, the whole story that the Gemara Kippin speaks about, the fact that a person loses everything should in no way mean that he has to give up on being what it is that he knows he is. And that because of that, if you hold that, so then that would mean that he was a melech, he lost it all, he was a hedyot, but he came back to be a melech again. But if a person allows himself that, the way that they put it is that there's more of a danger in the change than in the situation. So in other words, if a person loses everything, the loss can be much more damaging than the fact that he no longer has that madriga that he once had. Because the loss can put him into a depression. It can make him lose faith in his own self. Because of that, he'll never get it back. So the idea of a year in this machlokas is to point out to an Adam that never should he lose touch with his own achievements, no matter what it is that he has to go through in life. Okay, we'll continue Bezrat Hashem tomorrow and take a look at some more of the Inyanim of Shlomo.